So we've been talking about the sitter, and in particular, writing in your sitter was something that we started talking about last week. And I hope people have a sitter here. It will definitely help. If you don't have one, it's going to make it a little harder. What we started with last time was we began with the passage from the Talmud Yerushalmi, in which various Tanoim, Amoraim, sages from the time of the Mishnah, the Gemara, were talking about how hard they find concentration during davening, how easily they are distracted, to the point where one of them said, I'm really grateful to my head because it bows for Modim, even if I'm not paying attention, and I forgot that I was at Modim, my head knows to bow anyway. So the question is, you know, what can you do about it? And my solution, or one solution anyway, is to write things in the sitter. So we talked about why you use a sitter in the first place and the various halachic reasons to use a sitter. And then we came to the issue of writing in it. And I said that there are three problems we're trying to solve. Problem number one is that we're told, ha'osa tfilaso keva ein tfilaso tachanunim. If a person davens in a way that is rote, in a way that is fixed, it's just a fixed text and it doesn't convey our personal experience, then it's not successful. It's not davening. It doesn't davening in terms of our feeling, in terms of our concentration. And Hashem says, I'm not really interested in davening that is rote. That's number one. And number two, and this is sort of where we left off, is the problem of the blob of text in the sitter. Yeah, this week I just took a random sitter out of Clanton Park because that's where I am. So the problem which we noted last time, if you look in Psukei Dezimra, and you have these paragraphs of Tehillim, like the one that I'm holding up here, and it's there as a paragraph. You know, you could be the greatest student of literature. Try reading a poem that's printed in paragraph form and get any appreciation for it, and you'll see it doesn't work. Poetry should be written in lines which are divided properly, which present the thoughts in a clear way. And we showed this with Baruch Sha'amar, how Baruch Sha'amar is printed in many siddurim in a paragraph form, and the result is that you lose the poem. Baruch Sha'amar is a poem. And we went through it last week, and actually I'm curious to see how this sitter does it. This was not the one I was using. Yeah, this sitter has it in a paragraph form, so you don't realize. It's Baruch Shamar V'Haya Ha'olam. Baruch Hu. Baruch. Omer V'Oseh. Baruch Gozerim Kayim. Baruch Osem Reish. Each line starting with Baruch, because it's trying to highlight the things that God does for us, and each line has a verb describing what God does. We talked about Chai La'ad as being a verb as well. And then the second part of Baruch Sha'amar is then offset as our response. Because God does this, 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 therefore I will do this, this, this in response. Which you completely lose when it's just, you know, text. Did we talk through Ashrei last week? Did I go into Ashrei? If no one remembers, then okay, then we're good. Then we'll do it now. So Ashrei is another one of those which unfortunately gets printed as a paragraph. Like, whoever thought it was a good idea to print Ashrei as a paragraph? The fact that each line starts with a different letter of the alphabet should be a clue that it's meant to be read line by line as a poem. It doesn't make any sense. Why are you putting it the way, you know, they do it here in this sitter? Right? Can you see that? I think we figured out last time whether it's reversed or not on your screen. I'm looking at my screen where I have it like that and it's reversed. But it becomes impossible to read properly. So I'll show you what I have in mind. What I'm going to actually do is share my screen with Ashrei printed in Tehillim, where it's, you know, in the version that I have on here, it will be. Hang on 1 second. There we go. And now I'll just share the screen so you can see it. It's printed line by line more poetically. Can everyone see that? Okay. Do you need me to make the font larger or it's okay? Donnie says yes, it's okay. Anybody else? Are people frozen or is it just me? No, you're good. Okay. So here you see the text of Ashrei. Of course, the first thing you notice is that the first line that we're used to of Ashrei isn't there. That's because Ashrei, the opening sentence, is actually not from this parak in Tehillim. This parak in Tehillim starts with Tehillah LeDavid. But that's not what I want to talk about right now. I want to show you how important structure is, and we miss it in the Siddur. Ashrei is not just a block of let me sing something to God. There are three parts to Ashrei. Can anybody look at this and tell me where the three parts begin and end? What are the three parts of Ashrei? It's okay if the answer is I don't know what you're talking about. I'm good with that. But there are three parts here. Okay, so I'll show you. The three parts of Ashrei. The first part...
I feel like I can just distinguish between the second and the third part.
Yeah.
Which is, the third part starts with Tzadik Hashem, the Vodokha.
Interesting. Why would you divide it there?
It's because then it starts talking about Hashem itself and his attributes.
Well, it is interesting that it yeah. Well, the previous line is also about Hashem, but you're right that it switches from being talking to God to talking about God. Right? In Pasuk Tet Zayin, Potech et Yadecha, you're talking to God. You open up your hand. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, you're talking about God. God is righteous in all of his ways. So I do see a switch there. So I see that. But both of them are about God. But you're right. There is a distinction between the way that each line works. But take a look at what I want to show you here, because I think your distinction is a good one and bears analysis. But start from the beginning. Tilal David, Aramim Chalokai HaMelech, and run through Pasuk Gimel. So now it's Psukim Aleph to Gimel. Tilal David, through Gadol Hashem Umhulal Me'od. That's section one. Section 2 starts with Dor L'Dor and runs through Tov Hashem L'Kol V'Rachmav L'Kol Ma'asav. Okay, so your opening line, your opening section is sentences 1 to 3, Aleph to Gimel. Your second section is Dalet through Tet. Now that I've marked off the sections, can you tell me what's the difference between the first and second and third sections? Because the third section is going to run from Yoducha almost to the end. It's going to stop short at Pasuk Chaf. Anybody see a difference? So here's what I see.
Is the second part, like the first part about praise, the second part about acknowledging what Hashem has done for us?
Interesting. Well, I think you can see that, but I think that those are both fundamentally praise, right?
Right, but meaning like the first seems a little bit more general.
Mm-hmm. I definitely see that. I hear that. And what would you do with the third part then?
I'm not up to there yet.
Okay.
I see a difference in language. The first part is singular and the second is plural.
Bingo. Bingo. The first part in Pasuk Aleph, and this may tie in with what Hadassah is doing also, but the first part is singular, Aro Mimcha. I will exalt you. God, I will elevate you. Aro mimcha, avarecha, I will bless. Avarecheka, I will bless you. Ahalala, I will sing to you. And what is it that I'm going to say? Pasuk Gimel. Gadol Hashem umulal me'od v'ligdulaso ein cheker. That God is great, exalted, beyond anybody's comprehension. End of section. Yeah.
And he says, Asicha and Asaprena, which is more singular.
Correct. So in hay, you get a new twist. In Dalid, it's not abandoning the old. However, there's a clear switch to the plural. Dor l'dor yishabach ma'asecha. From generation to generation, people will praise what Hashem has done. They will speak of Hashem's greatness. Hadar kavod hodecha v'divrei nefilah secha asicha. I will continue in pasuk hey to also speak your glory. Pasuk vav ve'zuz narosecha yomeru. They will speak of God's greatness, as well as kedulascha asaprena. I will tell of God's greatness. Zecher avtuvcha yabiu. They will recall all the good you've done. And what is it that they are going to say and I am going to say? In other words, in this section, in the middle section, I am speaking. And generation to generation is speaking. What are we saying? Psukim chet and tet. Chanun v'rachum Hashem, erach apayim mugdol chased, tov Hashem lakol v'rachum avakol ma'asav. That God is great to all. So you haven't lost the personal, but you've gained the across time component to it. That's your second section, and then it starts again with pasuk yud. Yoducha Hashem kol ma'asecha. All of your creations are going to praise you, thank you, sing to you. They will speak of the wonder of your malchut. They're going to tell everybody about your gevura. And what are they going to say? Psukim mem, all the way through shin. Malchuscha malchus kol olamim, somecha Hashem l'chol anoflim, enei chol elach yesaberu, poseach yodecha, all the way through shomer Hashem es kol avav, eiz koshim yashmid. And then the conclusion is, tilas Hashem yedaber pi, I am going to exalt God, vivarech kol basar, and all flesh is going to do the same. So in other words, in Ashrei, what you have are three sections. Your first section is just personal. Your second is personal and generation to generation. And then your third is all of Hashem's creations. And in each of these sections, it begins by saying, whoever it is going to speak, here's what they say. This one is going to speak, here's what they say. Third section, they're going to speak, and here's what they say. But if all you're doing is printing Ashrei like this, who in the world is going to figure that out? It's in a paragraph. I don't want to say it's useless. That's not, that's overstating
it.
Sorry?
This is also art scroll, but yeah.
That's much better. Yeah, that's much better. Right there, you have a fighting chance.
Well, this is the Seder of Phenom, but why is there an assumption that you don't always need that?
Yeah, the answer really is stinting on paper. That's really what it is. Because if they were to put Tehillim line by line by line, they would have to add more pages. No. Not all of us are your age. Don't make the font smaller. The problem is also that as you get older and you need larger font, you also don't want to hold a heavy book. There's that problem as well. Sorry, what, Don?
Can you explain just one more time, what's the difference of generation to generation or generational? I didn't...
Yeah. In the second section, it's Dor L'Dor Yishabach Ma'asecha. From generation to generation is going to. So it's not just me personally, but it's people across time are going to do it as well. And then the third section, going back to the Siddur, is the emphasis on kol, everybody. And kol is a word that reiterates throughout the third section. So it's not just the beginning of it, Yoducha Hashem kol ma'asecha, but also where was it? Malchus kol olamim, memshaltecha b'chol dor v'dor, semech Hashem l'chol hanoflim, zekev l'chol hakifufim, inechol elecha yesaberu, masbia l'chol chai. The emphasis is that it is universal, meaning, I would argue, not just people. Meaning everything God has created is going to exalt him. And here is something I was going to point out, so thank you for asking. Vivarech kol basar, in the last line. So that line, Vivarech kol basar, is reminiscent of a pasuk in Yoel, the third parak in Yoel. It's a well-known pasuk, because it comes up, I believe, in the Rosh Hashanah davening. Hang on, I will call it up on my computer here and share it with you. No, not that one. I thought it was in Parak Gimel. Now I'm not seeing it. Oh, there it is. That's why. Hang on 1 second. I will share it because I didn't put it on the source sheet. The advantage of doing this by Zoom. So the opening pasuk here. V'haya acharechein eshpoches ruchi al kol basar. The first two prakim in Yoel speak of a devastating plague of locusts coming and destroying everything. And then he says, and after that, eshpoches ruchi al kol basar. I will put my spirit, my prophecy, on all flesh. Says the Medrash in Avos Rabbi Nasan, kol basar means animals as well. Everybody will become Nevi'im. Everybody, even the animals, will have access, whatever that means, to Hashem's inspiration, not just people. So, Vivarech kol basar is actually not only the human beings, but in that third section, it's all that Hashem has created is going to recognize Hashem. It's universal. You follow? So there's a lot more to say about Ashrei, but we have a lot more to talk about. This is to me the reason why you want to write in your Siddur, because if I write in my Siddur, I can make little notations to delineate. Here one section ends. Here another section begins. I'm one of those annoying people who like write in their textbook and then try to sell it to somebody else the next year. That's me. That end on page 115, see page 224. 224, go back and see page 115. That's me also. But there's a lot of value to being able to change your Siddur from a blob of text to something that actually conveys messages. The other problem that we really need to solve, and for this, look back at the source sheet, please, is just that we say it so often. We say these words of davening so often that it's too easy to say them without thinking. This is separate from the problem that it's a fixed text, which doesn't have the personal touch. Separate from that is just that we're too familiar because we say it too often. I brought you the Gemara in Bava Basra, which says, Shalosh Averos Ein Adam Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom. There are three sins that a person is not saved from every single day. People do these every day. One, Hirhur Avera, thoughts of immorality. Two, Iyun Tefila, examination of one's davening. And three, Lashon Hara. And the Gemara says, Lashon Hara? Really? You think people speak Lashon Hara every day? Can that really be? Avak Lashon Hara. Things that are almost Lashon Hara. These are three things the Gemara says people are doing every single day. So the first one I can understand is an Avera. Thoughts of immorality? Check. Lashon Hara? Avak Lashon Hara? Avera. Check. What's the Avera of examining your davening? So there are two different schools of thought. One school of thought says what it means is saying, I davened really intensely, therefore God has to answer me. That's Iyun Tefila, and that's an Avera. However, the other way to take the line is absence of Iyun Tefila. You don't think about it. You're not focusing on it. You're just saying the words without really thinking about them. And the Gemara says people do this every day. Now, not you. I'm confident that all the people on this Zoom are entirely pure people who, are entirely focused and all that. But because you will encounter people in your daily lives who do have problems with this, therefore it's worth it to know about this issue. No, the Gemara is not talking about you. That was a joke. Okay. So this is the third challenge. The Rambam has some very strong language about a person who davens and their mind is elsewhere. Take a look at number 3 from the Moreh Nevuchim.
Can I just ask, why is that an avera like the other two? Meaning, if you don't complete the mitzvah, you're avera, you're complete the mitzvah 100%, that's one thing, but categorizing it as a...
Yeah.
Avera is like, that's pretty harsh.
True. What do you think? You've asked a good question. What do you think the answer is?
I'm not sure. That's why I'm asking.
Anybody? Goldie's right. Why are we calling this an avera? It's just an incomplete mitzvah. So why are they calling it an avera?
To show how important it is.
Mm-hmm. I think there's an element of how important it is. Go further with it, though.
We have to make efforts to, like, make real concerted efforts so that it doesn't happen. I don't know.
Dominating is not...
talking to Hashem, like when you talk Lashon Hara, it's Bina Adam L'Chavera. When you're davening, it's the talking to Hashem. And if you're not making it anything that it should be, then it could be compared to speaking.
Is that my connection, or is that you, or is that Chana's connection? Do you know? Everybody else hears her fine. It's my connection.
I don't know.
No, I just got a message that my connection is unstable. So it's me. I didn't hear quite everything you said. I heard you start by talking about how it's talking to Hashem, but then I didn't really catch the rest.
So the speaking, Lashon Hara would be Bein Adam L'Chavero, and davening is Bein Adam L'Makom.
That's true.
The davening part is how we speak about Hashem, and if we're doing it with zero kavana or intent or understanding, it could be similar to Lashon Hara.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that parallel.
It's a pretty strict level.
Yeah, that's a very interesting parallel, but it doesn't, I mean, it won't work with the third one, or the first one really in the list, with Hir HaAvera. But it's an interesting idea for sure. But let me offer you another take on this. If I am, let's take a social situation, okay? I have a friend who says to me, I could use some help. I need a loan. How much do you need? He says, I need $1,000. I say to him, you know, $1,000 is a little steep for what I can help you with right now. I can give you $700. Right? What's his response going to be? Hopefully. Thank you. His response is going to be, thank you very much. You didn't give me 100% of what I needed, but you gave me 70% of what I needed, and I appreciate it. Now I'll go somewhere else, and I'll get the other 30%. What if, on the other hand, I'm talking to my friend, I'm having a conversation, and at the same time, I pull out my phone, right? And I'm looking at the phone 30% of the time. Oh, look, Moshe just emailed me, right? The 30% of the time I'm looking at my phone and 70% of the time I'm talking to him. What's his reaction going to be? Is his reaction going to be as positive as the guy who just got the 70% of the loan he wanted? Sorry? Hadassah, you were saying? Yeah.
You're not giving your full something. You're not getting anything. You're not getting as much out of it, and either is the other person, or in this case, Hashem.
Right. Attention is not like a loan. Right. Attention is either there or not there. It's not the same thing, and the same thing is true. To go back to Goldie's question, in terms of a mitzvah that I do. There are mitzvot that I do in which God says, I would like you to do X. I can't do X. I'm not at that level. I'm not, whatever the reason is. So I can do 70%, and that's the best I can do. So you can, you know, you can come up with random mitzvot that are like that. The you know, somebody says, I know, God, that you want me to finish learning Shas. You know, I'm not there, but I can do this. I can do this learning. So Hashem's going to value what you do. But that's not what davening is. Davening is not a cumulative thing. Davening is either you're paying attention to God or you're giving God 70% of your attention. And giving God the 70% of your attention is like talking to somebody and looking at your phone at the same time. So if you take a look at the Rambam in source number 3, I think that supports this read. The Rambam from the Mor Nevuchim. He says, Im tispalel bahanas fasecha. If you daven by moving your lips, ufanecha la kotzel, and your face is to the wall, which is the way the Gemara says the person should daven. You're supposed to daven next to a wall, from Chizkiyahu. But you're thinking about your business, you're thinking about commerce. Tia az karov mimi shenemar bohem karova tabefihem v'rachok mikil yoseihem. You're almost like those people about whom the pasuk says you're close to their mouths but far from their innards. God is, you know, they're talking about God, but God's not in their kishkas. That's the idea. It's an insult to God to say, I'm here to talk to you, and my head is in my shopping list. My head is in the conversation I had with somebody right before I came to daven. My head is in the business I have to take care of after I daven. You know?
I have a question.
Yes. So you're asking a really good question. The Gemara asks that question. The Gemara talks about a person who has been traveling and just came in off the road. And in those days, traveling was not, you know, you'd get in your car and drive. You're, you know, on a wagon over a bumpy road pulled by a donkey, or you're riding the donkey, or you're walking. You come in from the road and you're just exhausted and you can't concentrate. The Gemara says, don't daven. Don't daven. It lists Chachamim who would not daven for 3 days when they came back from a journey because of this concern. The Shulchan Aruch discusses the question because we're told that the minimum kavana for Shmona Esrei is to have kavana for the first bracha, the first bracha, avos. So what if a person said avos and then they realized that they just weren't feeling it, they weren't in it? What do they do? And the answer is go back. Say Shmona Esrei again. However, the Shulchan Aruch writes, we don't do that. Because if we did that, we would just be stuck all day long saying Shmona Esrei over and over again and not having Kavanah each time. The reality is people aren't up to the task. And as you said, if that's what they're going to do, they're never going to daven. If they're going to say, I can't daven right now, I just can't concentrate, the result will be that they'll never daven. Yeah, you can't have that as your conclusion. So basically the answer is, yeah, it's really bad for me to be insulting God, but it's worse for me not to be in communication at all.
That's what I would have thought. I just wanted to confirm that.
But I want to come back to this because there's actually more to be said. You know the famous story about it's a Hasidic story. It's told with the Baal Shem Tov usually, but I've heard it occasionally about others, with the boy who comes into shul and he doesn't know the Aleph Beis, and he knows the Aleph Beis, he doesn't know how to daven. So in one version of the story, he just whistles, and another version of the story, he just says the letters of the Aleph Beis and says, God, you know, you can put them in order, and, you know, we say that's the most beautiful tefillah, and that's the one that was accepted by Hashem, and it was elevated. You know the story in some version or another. What happens with that boy next year? Good. He came to Shul on Rosh Hashanah. He came to Shul on Yom Kippur. And he whistled, and Hashem loved his whistle. Because he didn't know anything else. What if he comes back again next year and does it again? Is that as acceptable as it was the first year? No, why not? Yeah, you had a year to learn something. The fact that it was sincere and heartfelt is important, but ultimately you got to do something about it, you know? And the same thing is true for us, meaning accepting that we have a problem, that we're not focusing, and saying, but if I don't daven because I'm waiting for concentration, then I'm never going to daven. Like, that works once. But if you have things you can do to help, to improve it, then that's your responsibility. And I would argue that there are things we can do. We just don't take the time to do them. You know, classic example. The Mishnah in Brachos, beginning of the fifth parak or fourth parak, Ein Omdin, fifth parak, says that you're not supposed to start davening after joking around with somebody. You're not supposed to start davening after learning something that's very in-depth. Rather, learn a little bit of halacha, something very smooth and simple and straightforward, and then go daven. Why? Simple psychology. Your mind is stuck on whatever you were doing before. If I was reading an engrossing book before, then when I daven, my mind is going to go back to the story I was reading, the characters that I was thinking about. For, you know, ditto for whatever other activity you want to mention. So don't do that. Create an interruption between what you were doing before and davening. It's a short step. It's doable. But again, people don't do it. You know? I mean, even as simple as, and here I'm not criticizing any of you, please don't take this as a statement about anybody here. This is a universal phenomenon. The phenomenon of people coming into davening after davening has started. Yeah, the reality is you put yourself behind the eight ball. Like how are you going to concentrate when you are already having to skip things in order to keep up? Right? I mean, isn't it logical to say I'm going to be there at the beginning? I'm going to be on time. Like, you know, this is the way davening should work. So that's where, for me, writing in a sitter is one of those solutions that can actually help. I started writing in my sitter. The first time I wrote in the sitter, like consciously as a strategy, was I had learned something, which I had always known, but it hit me a particular way that day, about how bad it is to say Hashem's name and not be thinking about it. Like, when you say Hashem's name, you have to think, I'm saying the name of God. And I was really disturbed by that, because I was like, well, you say it 1,000 times when you're davening. Like, how in the world am I going to have concentration, this is the name of God, every single time that I say Hashem's name? So I took my sitter, and I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to count how many times Hashem's name shows up. And over each word, every time it said Hashem's name, I just put a number to see how many times it shows up in this one, how many times it shows up in that one, with the idea that seeing that would help me somehow to notice them and to concentrate on them. There was somebody I wanted to daven for, somebody who was ill. So I wanted to remember them in Rifa'enu. So I start Shemona Esrei with full intention that I'm going to include the little thing about, you know, davening for people who are ill. And I realized when I was like Hashiva Shofteinu or something that I had missed Rifa'enu. Missed it. Next Shemona Esrei, same thing happened again. So what did I do? I circled the word Rifa'enu. That way, it'll catch my eye when I get up to that bracha in Shemona Esrei because there's a circle around it. Just very basic, not like Ashrei marking off sections, but just like basic. You want to notice something, put a mark next to it that'll stand out. Now, obviously, you can't just say, well, I'm going to circle this, and now it's going to work for me forever. Because what happens? What happens if you do that?
just as much unnoticed again.
Yeah, it's just part of the sitter now. So what you need to do is change your markings. So you'll circle it, you know, always in pencil, and eventually you erase it and you come up with something else. You know, it has to be something that you're willing to adjust over time, or else you just become numb to it. So that was where I got my start on it. It also can be a good educational tool. I remember looking around once in my shul in Pennsylvania, and I saw certain people who, during the repetition of the Shemona Esrei, were just staring off into space. Which makes sense, right? Because there's nothing for them to do. And I asked myself at the time, you know, I'm the rabbi of the shul, what do I want people to be doing during repetition of Shemona Esrei, during Chazaras Hashatz? Like, what do I expect from people? I know that I don't want them to be talking to each other. I know I don't want them pulling out their phones and checking on the news or their Twitter feed or, you know, whatever. But what do I want them to do? If I had my perfect world, what would it look like during repetition of Shemona Esrei? Right? I ask this question as I daven with the kids in school also. Like, what do I expect from a bunch of ninth graders during Chazaras Hashatz, when Shemona Esrei is being repeated? So Mishnah Berurah says, keep your siddur open and follow each bracha with the chazan. To the Mishnah Berurah, I say, you lived in Radin 100 years ago, and I don't know what they were doing in Radin 100 years ago, but I do know that I can't get a shul full of people to keep their siddur open and follow each bracha. Can't. I mean, I don't know. Where you daven, do you see people are able to focus during the repetition of the Shemona Esrei? Is that something you see? That's interesting. Do you find that women do?
I think, like, if you go to shul on Shabbos morning, most of the women are paying attention, yeah, clearly.
During Chazaras Hashatz. That's great.
That's probably the one time a week they actually participate in Chazaras Hashatz.
I hear that. That's a fair point.
That's and they haven't been there from the beginning, typically. So, like, if you're, you know, coming in at the tail end, it's easy to focus for half an hour.
I hear that. That makes sense as well. So, not to mention, of course, women having greater kedusha and so forth. But on my side of the mechitza, it's not there. It's just not there. But again, if you mark up your siddur, you have a shot. Because you can put in little notes, and we're going to talk about the specifics of these notes, but you can put in little notes that will help to give you something to think about in each part of the davening. Now, obviously, you're not writing in your siddur on Shabbos, thank you. It also means preparation. You do it in advance. And I think that's possibly the most important part of davening in general, is getting ready for it in advance. It's like Shabbos, right? All the prep for Shabbos has to happen in advance. The same thing is true for davening. Trying to fix it during davening is a lost cause. It's always going to be beforehand. I used to have on my board when I was a shul rabbi, I had a fellow who talked about the importance of people coming to meetings having done all the work beforehand. The goal of the meeting is just to consult on things that have to be done face to face that are the result of the work that was done beforehand. But all the subcommittees have to do their work in advance. They have to submit their reports in advance. Everybody reads them in advance. And at the meeting, you just consult on whatever needs consulting. By the way, that is the way that a board should be run, having nothing to do with anything else right now about tefillah. But that is the way a board should be run, and if boards ran that way, people would like board meetings a lot more. But in terms of davening, also, looking at it in advance and writing these notes will be of tremendous benefit. So I mentioned last time that people ask, when you talk to them about doing this, they say, are you allowed to write in a sefer? And the answer is, of course you're allowed to write in a sefer. Take a look at source number 4, please. I brought you a tshuva from Rabbi Avadia Yosef, which has nothing to do with writing during, you know, writing in a sefer, writing in a siddur, or anything. He's discussing the question of whether you make havdalah sitting down or standing up. Any of you make Havdalah sitting down? How many of you, your family makes Havdalah sitting down? No. Luba says no. Standing up. Everyone's family does Havdalah standing, right? That's pretty standard. Halachically, I feel like it actually makes more sense for people to make Havdalah sitting down. But I stand. My father stands. So there are Sfaradim indeed who sit. Logically, it should be sitting for two reasons. Number one, because the person who's making Havdalah is going to drink the wine. You make your bracha normally. When you're going to eat something, you make your bracha sitting down. You don't make your bracha standing up. So that's number one. Number two, there's an idea that all the people who are present, who are hearing Havdalah, fulfilling the mitzvah, have to establish themselves as part of the mitzvah, part of the group. And you do that best, says Tosfos, by sitting down. Logically, it should be seated. If I were coming up with what my family does, I would do it sitting. But again, my father stands, so I stand. Sorry, Goldie?
Don't we do the same for Kiddush?
Sorry?
At Kiddush, we also stand, though, even though the person who's saying Kiddush is...
Right.
So, wine.
Right. So Kiddush has the same reasons to sit. The only difference with Kiddush is, for the Friday night Kiddush, that there's a concept of standing for the opening paragraph, because, first of all, you say, Vayihi Erev Vayivoker, Vayihi Erev Vayivoker, and there's an acronym for the Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey, name of Hashem, and therefore, people stand because of that, or because we're testifying that Hashem created the world, and therefore we as witnesses bearing testimony, we're supposed to stand. So that's a
I think Rav Eliezer's family sits.
Yeah.
If I'm not
so
for Kiddush.
Correct. But I'm just showing the reasons why one would stand. In practice, there are three minhagim that I'm familiar with, and all of them are Torah. One minhag is to stand for Kiddush because you're standing already from the beginning. Second minhag is to sit the whole way through, which, as Aviva notes, some people do. And then third is the minhag of let's fool the guests, which is what my family does. We stand for the first half of Kiddush, and then we sit down for the second half of Kiddush. And if we forget to warn the guests who haven't been there before, it's always entertaining to watch what happens when they don't understand what just happened. Why did they all start sitting down? But there are three different minhagim about what to do for Kiddush, for the reasons that I just outlined. So Goldie, you're right. The same concerns apply for Kiddush as apply for Havdalah. So in this tshuva, Rav Ovadia quotes a very interesting story from the Sefer Aliyos Eliyahu about the Vilna Gaon. And I'm just going to, in the interest of time, I'm going to read out my English translation, but you can see the original there as well, in particular the part that I bolded. Rav Tzvi Hirsch, Av Beis Din of Otelion, and I don't know what that's supposed to be in English, so I just put the Hebrew letters in the English also, told me that he personally saw Rabbi Chaim of Volozhin, who was the chief student of the Vilna Gaon, make Havdalah after Shabbos while standing. He didn't dare to ask that the Vilna Gaon, in his Biur, ruled to make Havdalah while sitting. The Biur HaGra is the Vilna Gaon's commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. It is, for the most part, notoriously terse, and it's just like sources that relate to a text, but he has a comment in his Biur HaGra, his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, to say that Havdalah should be done sitting down. But he says, Rav Chaim of Volozhin is standing, I don't know why he's standing. His Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, wrote to do it sitting, but I don't want to ask him. But circumstances evolved, and Rav Chaim of Volozhin happened to see this Rav Tzvi Hirsch learning the Vilna Gaon's Biur. And Rav Chaim of Volozhin made a comment to him. He said, you should know that the Gaon wrote his Biur only for himself to remember the views and sources of laws. And what he did was, in the margins, in his Shulchan Aruch, the Vilna Gaon made these little annotations just for himself, because he wanted to remember, when he learns this halacha, this is related to this Gemara. This is Psak, this is not Psak, we follow this one, we follow that one. And then the story goes on that once he had the opportunity talking about the Biur HaGra, Rav Tzvi Hirsch says to him, you know, the Vilna Gaon said, make Havdalah while sitting. And Rav Chaim Volozhin says, you know what? I saw the Vilna Gaon make Havdalah. And the Vilna Gaon stood. So I don't care what he wrote in the Biur HaGra. He stood for Havdalah and I stand for Havdalah. The reason why I bring this is not for a fun discussion about whether the sitter stand for Havdalah and Kiddush, but rather for the point that the Vilna Gaon, as he's learning from the Shulchan Aruch, is writing things in the margin. Now, you will say, but I'm not the Vilna Gaon. Maybe the Vilna Gaon is allowed to write in the side of a Sefer, because anything the Vilna Gaon writes is instant Torah. So, you know, by definition, the margin of the Vilna Gaon's Shulchan Aruch is also a Sefer. However, this is standard in Torah, to write in your margins. If you were to search marginalia in online, you'll find marginalia in Sfarim down through the ages. If it's a Sefer Torah, it's a different story. There are rules about writing in a Sefer Torah. But any other Sefer, it is 100% fine to write in, with only one caveat, which is, in source number 5, the Rama notes that you shouldn't put pictures in your Siddur if it's going to distract you. Meaning, we have a long precedent of illuminated manuscripts in which people would put pictures in their Haggadahs, they put pictures in all sorts of Svarim. So that, he says, that the Rama writes, don't do that. Don't draw pictures in your Siddur. No doodling in the Siddur. It's going to distract you. But notes that help you to daven? Absolutely. Yeah.
This is so great. I'm very, very curious about Parsha. We only have 9 minutes left. Is it possible?
Yes, it is possible. So I'm going to make one more statement about this, and then we'll do the Parsha Dvar Torah just to get to that, and then you could tell Nechama, you know, she missed out. It was her Parsha article, her Parsha Dvar Torah. But the last point that I wanted to make about this is the same thing that I said before about the boy who, you know, only says the Aleph Beis or whistles. You have to try something to get out of that. You know, out of the set of problems that we identified. The fact that the text is a fixed text, the fact that it's printed in a blob so you miss things like everything we just, you know, showed in Ashrei, and the fact that we read it so often that our minds will wander, you need a way out of that, and not just for the sitter, but also for the machzer. I had said before, preparing for davening is critical. Preparing for Yom Tov davening, sitting down beforehand and reviewing it. The Shulchan Aruch we read last week says that you have to review the davening for Yom Tov in advance. So if it really bothers somebody to write into their Siddur, then I would suggest that they do the next best thing, which is use post-it notes. So use post-it notes, but it's not the same thing, because you can't make the same types of markings on a post-it note. But I think this is a critical thing to do. Okay, so we're going to come back next week, God willing, to how one writes in a Siddur and different kinds of markings and different ways to do it. There are all sorts of different types of writing that one can do. So that'll be, God willing, next week. But in deference to the Parsha, we'll spend a few minutes on the Parsha as well.